It'll come to order. Public hearing done. Bill 1231. In fact, you want to testify on this bill here, but...
Yes, sir. I'd like to get to it, but I have to make a decision. Well, I'm representing this today, so I'll get that. I'll tell you briefly in my, how I got to the interest in this bill. I introduced it, and the actual testimony on the for and against the bill will be given by some of the professional people who work with this problem. During the interim, I was asked to attend a meeting, the juvenile court, where various people were meeting together in an attempt to come up with some legislation that would bring out better legislation for the protection of children who are battered around. And I attended some of the meetings, and then I suggested that I invite Kathleen Buffay to attend the meeting because she was familiar with the legislation we had and would know better how to go about preparing legislation, and they agreed to this. So I attended some of one other meeting, I believe, that Mr. Buffay followed and attended the meetings. And it was my understanding that they had come to an agreement, although at all the meetings I attended, there was sort of a difference. It seemed to be a very controversial matter in the minds of some people, all working towards the same end of protecting these children, but with different ideas of how workable the bill was and what it would actually accomplish. And then the bill, they kind of slowed up, and the bill, they didn't seem to come in agreement with anything in. And all of a sudden, more interest was shown, and it seemed as though one had been waiting for another to introduce the bill. They got together and came up with this bill, which I thought they were all in agreement on. And since then, I have learned this is not so. I think there are people who attend these meetings who are here to defend the bill and speak for the bill. And believe it is, it's good legislation. There are some here who won't speak today, but intend to follow up on it because they believe it's good legislation. And I understand there are others, particularly from Multnomah County, who are here to say the bill is not workable, it's costly, or it cannot be defended, and that people can appeal some of these things, and actually that the bill is good. But there are some parts in it that are good, and there are some parts in it that are bad. So without any further ado, I want to say I'm interested, very much interested, in seeing that we get some legislation out for the protection of these children. And regardless of what happens today, I would ask the committee to look forward to working out those amendments on this bill that will be everyone concerned, that will, the majority of them at least, will be in agreement with, and that we'll end up with something good, that we won't be discouraged today because of the dissension in the ranks of the people interested in this great human cause, and to drop the bill. I feel pretty bad that I would have to come to you with the bill, and I know my co-sponsors feel the same, that there is disagreement on, but if there is, as I understand, and I guess you'll understand it more after this hearing, but that's the deal, and I think it's imperative, it's a must that we should come out with something, and we get off to a bad start. I hope it's going to be a good ending, and we'll really come out with a bill that's workable in the minds of all.
Thank you. I don't think we need to feel badly about introducing something that for a good cause, even if it is. I don't know of any good cause that doesn't have any dissension around the world.
Well, it hurts me, Mr. Chairman, that some of the people who attended these meetings, you know, and I thought they'd sort of gotten together and were in touch with some of the people who were in the committee, but we had a great deal with carrying out this bill, and to find out there is such a diversion of ideas on it, but I think it's good legislation. The cause is great, and I hope we will come out this session with something that's worthwhile.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. call first on that. First of all, for the purpose of the record, would you state your name?
My name is Kathy Jensen. I'm a court at Multnomah County Juvenile Court, where I've been employed for the last 6.5 years. Prior to that time, I worked for public welfare for a period of 3 years, and for a voluntary social agency for a period of about 6 months. During the past 10 years, I've had great exposure to the problems involved with children who are abused and mistreated. My experience with the first abused child was when I was just fresh out of college. I'd never heard about the sort of thing that got a real child. I got a call from the female court, which is my local law firm, and please come and get some funding for the foster home. When I arrived, there were two little boys who were aged 4 and 5, and they were bleeding from everywhere that you could bleed. And one little kid's ear was hanging by a thread. And I thought, yeah, I said, I bent down to say, please don't be afraid, I'm going to take you to the doctor and then to the home. And the little kid, the old man, looked at me and said, please don't eat me, lady, just a family. And that made an impression I went all over for that. Since then, I've regularly seen these children who are very seriously abused. Working in Oregon for the last 6.5 years, I felt that perhaps there was not as much protection to these children as there should be. And that is why we're seeking a change in the law. The group that began with this proposal for a change in the statute began at Multnomah County when we had meetings with representatives from all the agencies which would be involved in these cases. This included people from the district attorney's office, the police department, the sheriff's department, the welfare department, the juvenile court, and the voluntary social agencies, as well as the private doctors. The group was split into various committees, and I functioned as a co-chairman of the legislative action committee. My assistant, Dr. Armstead, who was at this time in Puerto Rico about it, was the leader. Our particular group was made up of several private doctors, one of whom is here, a member from the district attorney's office, who is also here, who has some private attorneys that completed transfer work. We had some private social workers, Rick Stroll from Waverly. We had some people from welfare who did not volunteer, and myself, as well as the police. When we initially started this, the focus that we had was we all felt there needed to be greater protection for these children. We had hoped to extend the numbers of people who were obligated to report abuse of children to the proper authorities and the existing statute that's the medical investigator. We had also hoped to establish some time limits for period time, how much time before this information got into the mill so that we could begin to be involved and provide a protective function for these children. We had hoped to increase the age limit. Now 12, we see a great number of children over the age of 12 who are seriously mistreated. We have hoped to extend the definition of abuse and make it more clear that we are speaking not only physical injury, also things such as gross malnutrition and gross emotional abuse. Due to the fact that we have all of the different disciplines involved, we have a wide sector of how each of us see this particular bill that has now been drafted. I think there are some good things in it, there are elements that seems with, there are some parts of it that are concerning to all the different factors. I think that it is a beginning working field that we need to be refined hopefully that it will be refined to the point where it does provide greater protection for the children, and that it can be passed to provide more assistance to those of us who do their deal with these abuse children. This is where I would conclude my presentation. I hope that we might have someone speak on behalf of law enforcement, someone speak on behalf of the attorney who used the process. Dr. Nash is here and will be able to speak on behalf of the doctor who involved. Rich Stoll is here and he'll be able to speak on behalf of the private search agency which is involved with this problem.
I'm George Nash, PhD in Portland. I'm a private practice in all of the staff at the University of Oregon. I was involved in most of these meetings. Representing private practice, but also working with Dr. Olmsted, who with Ms. Jensen and Nikki, most of the same. And there are some facts I think maybe you're aware of, and I might relate to a little bit. One thing, the magnitude of this problem is far beyond what the average person realizes. There were 35,000 severely injured children in the United States recorded last year. The Dr. Brady, who is here today, informs us that last month there were 80 or 90 cases registered in his office. The previous year there were hardly that many, or many more registered in the entire year. So it is on the increase as people take out their hostilities and their frustrations on their children as they have been doing since the beginning of time. And as the population increases, we need adequate, efficient protection. And the whole purpose of these meetings was to see if we couldn't improve the existing bill and facilitate the investigation and follow through and care. As Ms. Jensen said, this problem has many facets. I, as a physician, only handle the injury part. There's law enforcement agencies, there's the district attorney, there's the judicial part, in other words, the judicial part of it, it goes into psychiatrists and welfare and et cetera and et cetera. And it was the feeling of Dr. Olmsted and most people involved in this committee that many of these cases were lost or they were not carried through as efficiently as they could be under the existing law. You will get some dissenting opinion here. I might just briefly state what the essential changes are that we suggested. Number one, under Section 1, abuse. We added the word neglect as well as physical injury. Neglect, including malnutrition, which leads to physical harm, Section 1B, which leads to physical harm or to interference with the normal development of a child. In other words, as you might recall reading about recently in the papers within the last year, the people that their children were starved, this would come, would be covered. The attorneys say that we do not properly define neglect. This is something that I am not well informed enough to define legally. The next, under Section 1C, we wanted to extend the age to under 18 instead of 14. The main, another change, essential change, was Section 3, page 2 of this. We suggested that all the reports initially go to the juvenile department of the county. who in turn are for the law enforcement designated by that juvenile department. In other words, it would be the juvenile department that first received the call. They in turn then would contact the police department, or at times the police department may be the first person that is in the call, but it all funneled into the juvenile department of that county. Section 7, under state office, this is the one major change that most of us have agreed upon. We would like a separate office established. In this case, it was written up as under the state medical investigator. Now, Dr. Brady, as the state medical investigator, has 20,000 duties. His duties certainly cannot primarily be the battery child. There is some question as to whether it should remain in that office. With the volume that he is now receiving in reported cases, we maintain that one person or persons that should coordinate the investigation and the action on these cases, that could follow through, and above all, that could help in the process of helping in the educational service throughout the state on this problem. We as physicians have received our education slowly, we admit to that. And there are many physicians that are slow in reporting these things. We are becoming better educated. The emergency rooms certainly are becoming better educated on this problem. We feel that this could be facilitated if one person was spending their time under the direction of one office. It is remained in this law under the state medical investigator, but there is some question as to whether it should remain in that office. Those are the essential changes we would like to see with the volume of cases that is obviously increasing, that there be a person or office designated to help coordinate all the services, facilitate the care and protection of these children, and serve in the capacity of education. have a question on page 4 on the state office situation. Do we have any feeling that the perhaps it could be done rather than the state office has the county office situation that we're starting out? And so, either way, do you feel that the person that we have in the supervision of the chief medical state office, do you feel that person should be a physician?
Answer to your first question, there should be a state central office. These patients commonly move from doctor to doctor. They might be seen in the Salem General Hospital with an injury 1 year, and in Burns the next, and not even in Emmanuel Hospital, et cetera. So it has to be a central. Furthermore, some of these patients are moving from state to state. And a central state office where all of these are recorded could cooperate with other people. So we feel to me there should be one state office, as there is now. As far as a physician, I don't think a physician as such could function any better than somebody else. Our part of the program at the physician is care. We have nothing to do with the judicial aspects other than when we're being up to testify. We debated about putting this in the state health department and other departments. We're afraid it would get lost. I do not know. I'm a physician in private practice. We think that that has to be a physician. It would be nice to be, as it is now, under a physician supervision. It's a matter of being a physician who has that time. And this is a question of Dr. Bailey and all of this.
Do you think, Doctor, the one thing that concerns me, and I don't understand why I'm doing this, is the fact that can anyone submit a report about a child situation if they'll be then included in them and get a permanent record without having an investigation and access to the report? I'm not thinking that the physician is treating the child bad, I'm not thinking the next one may be informing the guy talks to the physician.
This was a fear initially with all of these laws, and in fact, nationally, was that you would be reporting on me as a neighbor and vice versa if there was a difference of opinion and we heard about you and that in every little bruise. Maybe Ms. Jensen and maybe Mr. Shelby, who came with the district attorney's office, can better answer that question. I have never had a case where it has been reported to me that has not been justified. I've had people call me and ask me, can they report their neighbor? They are fearful. They're regular patients of mine. I trust them. I say, well, at least call the juvenile court or the young protection division, and your name will not be, they will not necessarily take your name. And there does not have to be, as far as I know, any record kept on that case unless there is a suspicion on phone calls. But I would like I'd like the representative of the district attorney's office to answer that when he does come forward, because this is a fear that I think is probably a little unfounded throughout, and something that went through all of our minds that there was going to be overdone. Apparently, as far as I know, it has come. Thank you.
Committee, attempting to coordinate and work with the battered children who are at the medical school. There's a fair number of them. You mentioned that the first time this was introduced into the legislation was in 1962. I think all of us, and medicine particularly, have been long to expect that people could batter their children. And this is one of the things that is difficult about the problem. It's sort of the gray zone and the recognition that people do that in their children. Some of them, there is no question about it. The one that Ms. Jensen mentioned is the terribly sickly battered children, bruised and cut to foot with many fractures. There's no question about these. But we see a great many sort of gray zones where it isn't really clear to us whether it is excessive battering or not. So that the problem presents many features, and for this reason, I think it's important and feel strongly that a social agency of some sort, and by that I distinguish it from law enforcement agencies, and to take some interest in concerns of coordinating the activities. So many of the children we saw in the frustration that I suffered while trying to work with them have nothing really to do with any individual person, but since all the people working with children, with the battered children, are dedicated people and anxious to see this done properly. And this may be one of the reasons for the differences of opinion. But we do need some sort of coordinating group. So often the cases are slowed up simply because there is no central coordination, and literally the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. So that I'm particularly anxious to see some sort of state coordinating group or person or office that can help us with this.
Could you be a little more specific as to what you mean by coordinating? We already have a little advocate on reporting these things. They go to the medical investigator, the reporting officer going to the chief medical investigator. They are there available for anybody to, any law enforcement authority or welfare authority to call in and say, do you have a record of this child having been abused before, of this family? We already have that. Now, what, I'm a little lost to understand what you mean and what function this group of persons is going to do in coordinating, and who is going to coordinate?
Well, hopefully, it's able to keep an eye on the individual cases. So often, the cases bogged down simply because of one agency's used information from another agency.
Which agency used information from what agency?
The juvenile court, the welfare, the police. They're all working on these cases individually.
Questions? thank you very much for coming. This is Stoll.
I'm Richard Stoll, social worker at Wayne and Children's Hospital. I have kind of a narrow view of battered children because we provide shelter care from Oklahoma County Public Welfare. And I see the kids when they walk in the door and then they leave. I usually follow up by talking to the workers, but I really just see them for a short period, maybe a day, up to 5 or 6 weeks, depending on the case. So I think it's probably the follow up one thing. I've had children come in, maybe say yes to the family before. One time there was a failure to drive, the child died. Next time, all the family came in, or another child had the same problem. You try to make it difficult. Follow through the same age, see what has happened. I had another child come in with a broken arm at that time. It was already beginning to heal, so it was about 7 to 10 days old. Mother, as far as I understand, was involved in the death of another child several years earlier. These children were left in the home. Court supervision was terminated. Then the fear comes to him. Just identifying the reasons of this problem, I don't see the conditions. I see the kids that are up and about, they can still move. They've got bruises, maybe old fractures. The reasons for them coming in often aren't bad. I get children in that are coming in because of the one just recently, the mother was having trouble managing the child. She came in, we admitted him during the case, the child bruises on his buttocks and thighs. I imagine she did it because she was set up. She couldn't take anymore. The children, the child
bruises. There was not that
bad. I have the kids I have are normal course of the time too, but sometimes it's stressful. And each child has to be protected. So child might come in as battered. We had one recently. There's no evidence of battering, but one child was 7 months old and 10 pounds, 9 ounces, 10 pounds, 11 ounces. He gained a pound, over a pound within 4 days. Did we have scars from a diaper rash?
We already have laws that say the crime keeps the child that way. How is this bill going to improve the system? That's what the committee is going to want to know.
I think the cases often get lost in the process. You may start the process and then the next day that child is released to decide we're not battering and that we just but this is not. Maybe a medical opinion of the made in the preliminary hearing. After that, nothing happened.
Wouldn't that child still get lost under this?
The way I see it, we had a central agency that was definitely coordinating, keeping track of even suspected cases. So I had a record of suspected cases. It would be much easier to follow that up or detect it again. As it is now, maybe that child was released that morning, a doctor did not see him, so a report was not against the file of the medical investigator.
I don't see how this bill is going to change that. That particular example that you did.
I see a central office that does more than just have a name, card, index.
Yeah, okay.
They would keep tabs on them like they do now. But they would also follow up, well, what happened if they got a complaint in the initial report? What happened after that? Right now, it ends with, okay, here's a card, and it picks up again, forward to the county. I think the central agency could also carry on an education program throughout the state. At this time, I think it's haphazard as to how the education is carried out. Social workers need it, lawyers need it, doctors need it. It's really hard to say what is a battered child. for what you think it is for that child, and especially what do you do when you think you have one? Normally, how do you have an advantage to work out fairly well with the two veteran immediately? But then, if you have a court case over, it may be more to the investigation.
So,
would you envision, Mr. Stoll, if a juvenile court makes an investigation and arrives at a determination that perhaps this is a matter of discipline and not of battery, that then under this present situation there would continue to be follow-ups in that particular case?
In the present situation?
No, as you anticipate the situation under this bill.
I would hope for this, but yes, this is what I would see.
In other words, you don't close the case, it looks like you're saying, if you continue to keep them open.
If it was just excessive discipline at this one point, if it's that excessive, then you'd be sure that it's not going to happen again. If you can be sure, then sure, close it out. But right now, it's often closed out at that point. Okay, it's excessive discipline, there's no more you can worry about this case. Let's wait until the child comes back with more injuries than you get. I think the doctors can tell you an example when the child's been reported and then comes back a little later and then we can return to the home with more injuries. More injuries.
And under the present situation, the child is reported again.
Yes. It's been lost in the meantime that allowed it to happen. We just point out to you that the way we had a central officer that asked for about every 6 months to report from the local office of what is happening on the street.
Even though the case was closed as far as the juvenile court was concerned.
I think there's a problem with this. It's an entirely judicial matter. Are we going to decide the child is bad or is he trying to be made a warning for a temporary commitment that he's been able to?
Or the responsible person practice.
Is that the end of the day? Once they've been adjudicated, is there anything more that will happen? It's not entirely a legal problem, but it is a defining it. It's dealing with it. It's a social problem, it's medical. There's a lot of other aspects that enter in that you can't just deal with and say, okay, it isn't here. You can't see it at this time.
Who decides in the final analysis whether a case has been followed far enough under the proposed program?
The central office, the person in there, would take somebody with experience. I think some common sense.
Thank you, Mr. Stoll.
Any other questions? No, thank you, sir. Mr. Wells.
Thank you, Chairman. Donald Welch, Director of Clackamas County Juvenile Court. I'm speaking here as a representative of the Juvenile Directors Association. I have not taken a position on this matter since it wasn't something we had reviewed together. Rather, when I became aware of this, I contacted the bulk of the directors in the state in an effort to find out what their attitudes were about this. And I might say that hearing what I'll report to you is a reflection of the very impacted. There is not a unanimity of attitude about this. Having heard Ms. Jensen and Representative Patrick especially helpful because the bulk of us in the state outside Multnomah the county didn't have the benefit of these meetings. And as a result, when the measure came to our attention, we wondered whether it was a reporting measure or an investigation measure or quite what it was. And in that context, what I discovered was especially in the eastern part of the state and down in the Southern Valley, the major concern, as they've read this measure, is that reporting is fine, and everybody's in favor of that. But to the extent it divests what is now an operation within welfare of the responsibility for investigation, the local juvenile court has substantial concern. As I get the picture, the normal abuse case is a combined effort in most counties where the bulk of the investigation and certainly the temporary care is provided by the local welfare administrator. The medical officer's role seems, perhaps with the exception of one county, we merely want to report it to the juvenile court if it exists. And then from there on, they coordinate very closely with our local investigator, known as the sheriff's office, and with welfare to complete the matter. In some cases, the juvenile court not getting involved at all until a matter comes back for hearing. The general attitude is, to the extent they will no longer be able to involve welfare in this, that it will serve no local purpose in these other counties. And in fact, it would cause a substantial detriment to the way they're presently operating. The idea that another agency can be named, a law enforcement agency designated, has been interpreted by some to mean that this would provide them the opportunity to continue to designate welfare. Others consider the likelihood strong that it would not be incumbent on any agency to accept this designation. Some police agencies, as I understand, see this as a way of divesting themselves of another aspect of investigation that they don't care for. There is a tendency, as you're probably aware, in juvenile courts to narrow the field of responsibility, often in the areas of delinquent activity. Some directors express the idea that in child welfare services, really this is what we're talking about, the welfare people should have more expertise, and it would be unreasonable to divest them of that role. The budget impact was impossible to assess, but the general feeling was, again, if this became an operation which had to be conducted by the local juvenile court, they would, of course, have to, number one, increase their staff some, I'm not sure how much, but also they'd have to increase the investigative expertise of their staff, which are really so far social workers, not investigators in an area which might even be considered criminal investigation. There were some notable exceptions to this. In particular, Washington County felt this was a substantially good measure because of consolidated responsibility in places where property should be, and that is in the juvenile court. Wayne County had a great deal to say. I see Mr. Wiley here, so I'll defer to him to make some more elaborate comments with reference to that. These were the prime issues of the juvenile directors, and to expand on that a little in terms of my personal reaction, we worried about the designation of an enforcement agency by the juvenile department because I'm not sure what this means. Again, I'm not sure if the agency designated would then carry with it a responsibility. If that designation is made in a given case, there's some total responsibility for the case being transferred to that agency. I think that's a substantial issue. Mr. Haas raised the issue about confidentiality. That was a source of some concern to us on page 4, line 5. Whether this report has reference to a juvenile department investigation which would include its entire social history, which I submit has confidentiality problems under Chapter 419. And whether it would extend to that maybe is something I would worry about. But also, cutting back up, I might, page 3, line 24, use of the word custody is at least to me confusing. I'm wondering whether it is intended to be a fiction, and if not, what's the impact of that particular section also, page 5, lines 2 and 3. Would seem to indicate a necessity to maintain jurisdiction within the court for at least 5 years. I submit in some battered child cases you might very well want to relinquish it and adopt it, and I'm not sure it's possible with this written the way it is if you have a continuing report. Those are a few problems which perhaps are minor, but nonetheless the source of some concern for it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Peck, I'm Dr. Brady. My function is to head the state office of death investigation, referred to in the statute as the chief medical investigator. I appear as in opposition to the bill, but I first want to explain to Representative Peck that I greatly appreciate her interest in this bill and feel that it is a subject that is worthy of legislative consideration. A lot needs to be done. Representative Peck's been giving me in the past, and I do appreciate your efforts here. My comments will be directed basically to Section 7, page 4, line 15. This states that this super state system shall be under the supervision of the chief medical investigator. This would involve a very significant amount of administration as far as I am concerned. I would have the responsibilities of hiring and firing however many people would be involved. I would be required to obtain space, and I do not have that space now. I would have to obtain equipment, which I do not have. I would be forced to supervise the reports. I would be involved with making out a great many forms, and there would be committee meetings. Most of the people here have spent literally hundreds of hours in committee meetings during the past 2 years, and I've skipped them all simply because of the demands on my time. I am trained as a pathologist, a physician specializing in laboratory medicine. My particular specialty is legal medicine. I also spend my time dealing in immunology, hematology, bacteriology, serology. I know radioisotopes, but I don't know pediatrics. I have not examined a living child for over 10 years outside of my own family. This is not my area of expertise. My time is expensive. My salary is in excess of $30,000 a year from the state of Oregon, which I think is less a reflection of my talent, I'm sure many would agree here, than it is the fact that forensic pathologists just aren't available. I'm the only one in the state of Oregon. There are only 50 of us in the country. I've been looking for 2 years to try to find somebody in my office, and it's taken us 2 years to get that for a scarce breed. On line 27, again, of page 4, for example, they refer that we shall make available our facilities. I have no facilities. My facilities consist of a desk, my secretary and her desk, and her typewriter. The Act assumes a great many things that I don't think exist. My recommendations and suggestions would be as follows. First of all, I would suggest that the medical investigator's office be removed completely from the area of child abuse. I'm not trained in it, I don't have the facilities, and frankly, an administrator who could be obtained for far less salary than my cost and could probably do the job better would, I think, be the man to properly handle this. The agency that this might be placed in, I would suggest first, the University of Oregon Medical School. They have the facilities, they have the people, they have the interest, and this is where the children go in the first place. If this is not acceptable, and I know some groups feel strongly that it is, I would then suggest perhaps the Attorney General's Office, a statewide agency which has administrative expertise and has, again, the people trained and experienced in investigative following. If this is unacceptable, I would suggest the Oregon State Police. When I was in Multnomah County, I turned all of these investigative functions over to the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office and to the Portland City Police, representatives of both of which are here today, and I feel that their investigation, from my point of view, has been excellent. I think the state police might well handle this equally well. I spoke with Mr. Superintendent Holcomb yesterday, and he said, no, he did not want it. Nobody wants it. There is a very significant need, in my mind, for a central agency, and I support Dr. Nash's testimony very strongly in this regard. There needs to be one person that's interested to coordinate tie in all of these agencies, and we're talking about interagency views here so you can't share them. Teach, get out, and do the work. I can't do it. I'm not equipped to do it. Mm-hmm. I would like to bow.
Doctor, were you invited to attend any of the hearings or the meetings concerning this legislation?
I was Representative Peck. I received notice, both written and oral notice, of each and every meeting. Every person involved in this committee made every possible effort to contact me to be notified. I was unable to attend more than several. I sent representatives from our office, both my personal secretary and the chief deputy from the Multnomah County Coroner's Office, as my representative to a number of these meetings. Finally, they grew so time-consuming and so involved with war stories that we dropped down. Which is perhaps my fault. They did drag on for a long time.
Goodness.
I'm sure you
Why not the Department of Health?
I personally would have no objection to that at all. The Department of Health, as you know, Representative Haas, is being considered for a complete reorganization.
and perhaps with this reorganization, there might be an agency establishing here that would do this.
You wouldn't have any?
I would have no objections at all. Dr. Press, who I spoke with, my boss, who I spoke with yesterday, told me that his estimate on funding, if this were to be placed either in my agency or also another one here, would be talking in terms of at least $40,000, $80,000 a biennium as a starter. Yeah, it goes through as it is here. If it were to start out more limited, as this bill proposes, I think the health agency could well handle it at considerably less cost of time. The question of finding somebody who wants to do the job.
Kevin, is there any substantive referral in this bill? It is not. It does not have a substantive referral. There is no, and I think that the speaker didn't do that because there's no appropriation. Obviously, it has to have a substantive referral. I'm going to take somebody's question. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Wiley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gordon Wiley. I'm here on behalf of Wayne County Juvenile Department. The director there provided me with a short statement last night, and I managed to get back some of our Oregon weather here this morning, so I hope I'll be able to fact check for you. As Mr. Welch has already mentioned, our main concern in Wayne County is, as far as this bill is concerned, is not the reporting and so forth that is provided for, but rather the transfer of the function on what might be referred to as dependency cases to the juvenile department from the welfare department. Now, in Lane County, this would mean that we'd be transferring all of the program services and staff that is currently being handled through the welfare department into the hands of the juvenile department. And in effect, in Lane County, at least, that would also be a transfer of function because as it's now situated, the juvenile department is handling the delinquency cases, the welfare department. Come to accord with the dependency cases. The welfare staff there, and I'm sure this is true throughout the rest of the state also, appears to have the resources, the skills, the ability to deal with both the investigation and the protective services and supervisory responsibilities that arise out of this type of case. Lane County Welfare Department operates shelter care facilities that are available 24 hours a day, and this is something which was, at least at this point, is not available to the juvenile department, again, would involve a transfer. It's our feeling that the public failure to report any suspected child abuse cases would not be solved by transferring this function from the welfare department to the juvenile department. We feel it's where it is now, and with the police department, the proper support to retain in these investigative services, that this area can be adequately covered in that way. All right, get to the presentation here.
Did you walk?
Don't have an adequate response to that. Don't get from out here. I would say, too, that I might just add a personal note. I am the referee of the juvenile court in Lane County. And in my experience, at least, the cases that come to the attention of the court, the system as it now exists seems to be working reasonably well. Now, it may be that some additions as far as reporting and the like would be appropriate, but the transfer function, I personally do not agree with, and I personally, the juvenile process.
request one.
No, thank you very much.
Well, I am. Kind of unusual, actually, that kind of girl that claimed to get some responsibilities and agency. You know, two people come in and tell you don't want it, and then you got to have it. Suggested to the other part, but very candidly, was one of the objections that the juvenile department has is that basically you're going to find it out of county or not, and that Walter can assume the state that's possible. Also, the budgetary problem is that why we're getting the disclaimer on the county level. If we could fund it and give you the money, we could feel that we could do the job.
I would say that's certainly a major part of the objection.
Yeah. So we're not really talking about the concept of the bill, we're talking about the general appropriation on it to give you the tools to do the job.
Although I would be reluctant to endorse the idea of getting the two functions into the same department. I'm not sure that perhaps a separate unit should be set up within the department that could deal fully with this type of case. But it seems, at least in Lane County, where which is admittedly is larger than a lot of counties in terms of population, where the juvenile department is dealing strictly with delinquency cases, and the welfare department is handling the things in that seems to work out very well. And I'm not sure mixing these two functions, which really are quite separate and distinct, even though they both come before the juvenile court, would work as well. But I would have to agree with your statement just in the part that the funding part is a big problem. Juvenile department, of course, has the usual budgetary struggle with the county commissioners every year. I'm not trying to indicate that we aren't well supported by the commissioners in Lane County, but I'm sure that they would throw up their hands in horror at the thought of the added expense of this one.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Last question.
Yes.
Wiley, several people mentioned the need for coordination between agencies. Is there some reason why the juvenile department and the welfare department can't coordinate their activities?
Not that I'm aware of. They are very well coordinated in Lane County.
Well, what is there about the bill that's going to prevent this from continuing?
Well, I don't know that it would prevent it, but
you have some fear that it's going to be this function is going to be taken away from the welfare department, placing responsibility to do them. Why does that necessarily follow?
That there would not be coordination? Yeah, I did not mean to indicate that there would not be coordination. I'm sorry if I used that lesson with that expression.
Doesn't the juvenile court use the welfare department?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's what it is. Couldn't that still happen? Could the juvenile court still use the welfare department and investigate?
I suppose that the juvenile department could contract with welfare to handle these services.
My name is Bill Sophie. I'm a deputy district attorney in Multnomah County. For a year and a half, I was chief deputy district attorney at the juvenile court. For the past year, I've been in the criminal trial staff of the district attorney's office. I've also participated in the grand jury there. I think that my time in the district attorney's office, I probably participated in maybe 100 or 150 of these cases. And on the comments here today, gentlemen, I would like to explain generally how the system works, because I think we're really losing the entire focus of what any legislation is intended to do. I am marked out as against this particular bill. I am for some changes in the present legislation, but not the changes in this bill. The bill and the statute presently in force in the state is merely a compulsory reporting statute, which is designed so that the law enforcement agencies, be it juvenile court, welfare, the police, can find out about battered children. I will go through the changes that I think should be made in a minute and some of the problems with this present bill. I think the first thing to remember, though, is, and contrary to what one of the previous speakers said, this is essentially and in every single way a legal problem. First of all, you've got a two-pronged approach to this. You have the criminal approach of the parent that abuses the child, and the potential criminal case there. You have the juvenile court approach, which is the case where you try and protect the child, take the child out of the home, or maybe even terminate the parental rights entirely. In order to do either one of these things, it requires proof which can be presented in court and has to be proof that can be presented in court as legal evidence. And I know Mr. Hogg is an attorney. He could explain this just as well as I can. Took it into the script, and I believe he's just the attorney.
These gentlemen are all the time.
Fine,
myself.
I don't know the other two gentlemen. Now, I don't want to go into the specific drafting problems, but the bill as proposed is going to complicate the system, I feel, if it's possibly beyond the way it's already complicated. When a case of abuse is reported, generally, the person who should receive that report is a police officer or a law enforcement agency. The general case in Multnomah County concerns either a doctor calling up saying, I've got a kid in my office that's been abused, or a school principal, somebody like this, calling up saying, I have an abused child. They should not call the juvenile court, they should not call welfare, they should call the police. The police should go out. If it is a proper case, they pick up the child and turn the child over to one of these other agencies, generally welfare, for shelter care. The police then should investigate the case, not a medical investigator. The police should use medical personnel to develop their case. The case should then be presented to a district attorney who determines whether the case is prosecuted in as a criminal case or as a juvenile court case or both. Now, we must remember that juvenile court and welfare are essentially social agencies. Their investigation is done to develop a social plan. They do not investigate to develop evidence of abuse, which would give the juvenile court jurisdiction to proceed. As the committee undoubtedly knows, the juvenile court hearing is divided into two phases, a jurisdictional and a dispositional. In the jurisdictional area, you have to have proof. And this means you have to have people who saw abuse being rendered upon the child, who have witnessed circumstances which would indicate abuse, or perhaps who just observed the child in a beaten situation, in a beaten condition. The welfare people, the juvenile court people, render opinions based upon the observations of other people. This is not admissible evidence in the jurisdictional phase or in the criminal phase. I beg to differ with the chairman. You said that there was adequate criminal legislation in this state to cover this problem. There definitely is not. The only criminal legislation on this is assault and battery, or aggravated assault, or else attempted murder. There is one statute in the state about abuse to a child by a person who's not a parent, which has misdemeanor penalties. There is no neglected child criminal legislation in this state. Now, my entire focus, and I have attended most of the meetings in Multnomah County, I've spoken at a number of every group that will let me talk, is the problem of developing evidence for court, because Dr. Olmsted, who participated largely in writing this bill, and many of the social people, social welfare people, have said continually the cases are lost, the cases are mishandled, or these children go back to their parents. Every time that I know of that a case where the child has gone back that maybe something is wrong is because we have inadequate evidence, because of inadequate investigation immediately after a report was due. If this case, if the juvenile court or the welfare agency is in charge of investigation as of this new bill, these people are not law enforcement officers. They will not go out into the neighborhood and talk to neighbors. They will not try and develop evidence. They'll try and develop a social plan. And that's going to thwart any investigation towards a criminal case or towards a jurisdictional case in the juvenile court hearing. Now, as far as changes that I would propose and that I have proposed continually, first of all, the bill changes the age for which a compulsory report is required from 12 to 18, which is the juvenile court jurisdictional age. In my mind, that's a good change. This would require doctors or other people within the specified categories to report suspected abuse if they fall within this 18-year-old age limit. Secondly, I think that the compulsory report should be expanded in that more people should be required to report. Under the present law, a teacher is not required to report to the police or to any, or the medical investigator. And kind of a curiosity, the medical investigator, at least in Multnomah County, has designated the police as his agency or his deputy to investigate these cases because he can't do it. And this is a way we have gotten around the legislation in Eastern Multnomah County in order to obtain adequate investigation in it. Anyway, if a teacher observes some abuse, he's required to go to the principal, and the principal decides if it's going to be reported. In my mind, the teacher himself should be required to report, and this should be done immediately. I think the law should include time limits, so that after the oral report, there is a written report in which this person's recollection is put down on the paper. And this will aid him in testifying in court, because we do have to have testimony in court at all times. One problem throughout the statute, the way it is presently written and the way it is proposed to be written, are these time limits. I feel that the police should be required to report to the district attorney, the juvenile court, and the welfare agency within certain time limits with their investigation. The district attorney, by tradition, is the person who decides if there is a case to be brought in a juvenile court or a criminal case. He's the person who should weigh the evidence and determine what's going to be done with it. A state agency is not qualified to make a determination for the different district attorneys as to what he's going to do with the case. That's up to the district attorney in any one county. If he doesn't do his job properly, he should be voted out of office, he should be criticized. It's mainly a case of what dedicated people can do in the system, but I don't see a state agency being able to come in and do this. Now, I feel that there should be one thing that the new bill does add is that in every case where there is a report of abuse, there should be a medical report, and that is a very good thing. The police should be required to investigate and report immediately to the juvenile court and to the district attorney. In a battered child case, generally the welfare department, at least in Multnomah County, provides shelter care, but they do not investigate it. I know from practicing Lane County as well as Multnomah County that there the welfare department does the investigation as far as the social plan. In that place, then the police should be required to report to people who are developing the social plan for the purpose of aiding them in development. If the juvenile court or the welfare, however it was set up under this new bill, did the investigation, they would not be allowed, I don't feel, under the laws of confidentiality, to turn the results of their investigation over to the district attorney for any resultant criminal prosecution. So that would thwart one whole section of the judiciary system. Or else you'd have to change a number of laws on confidentiality, especially in the juvenile court. Those are very important. Now, as far as the definition of abuse, it should be expanded so that different kinds of abuse come within the types of situation which have to be reported by these required groups. Under the new bill, neglect is not defined. Therefore, you don't know if it's intentional neglect, or maybe it's neglect by a person whose mental capabilities are so bad that they can't do it intentionally, but they are neglecting a child. Another situation is a sexual abuse. I've tried cases in court where 8-year-old children have had gonorrhea, syphilis, but no doctor's ever reported that to a law enforcement agency. That's the kind of a thing that should be included under a compulsory reporting system. I have my notes here, excuse me, I haven't got this all memorized, I kind of refer to them. The criminal laws under the new Oregon Criminal Code, as it is proposed, have been changed, and they do give the district attorney much more power in these cases. Also, there is now a better statute proposed as to the husband-wife privilege, because under the old law, if a case was not reported under this compulsory statute, then the husband-wife privilege could be interposed in a court proceeding. In order to get around the husband-wife privilege, it has to be reported to the medical investigator as detailed in this law. Most cases of abuse are not reported as required by this law. They come from different sources. Therefore, the husband-wife privilege is still there, and despite that, in the court proceeding. I think there should be some sort of a central agency established, and I shouldn't say agency because I don't envision a new agency. Some sort of a person should be responsible in a statewide organization for keeping a file of names of people who have been involved in suspected abuse. Therefore, if in Multnomah County we get a child and we know that they haven't lived there very long, if we could call up a state agency and find out if they've been involved in other counties and then write to those counties for that information, that's what's needed. I do not think, in my personal opinion, I'm not speaking for any group, that the state agency needs to become involved in each and every case. I think that the statewide should definitely advocate a program of education and get interested people to speak statewide. I don't think that a person in a state agency is going to be able to compel certain types of behavior on a statewide basis from district attorneys and juvenile courts. Now, as to other problems in this statute, first of all, the 5-year provision, it's near the end as to what the state agency is going to do, and they submit these reports for 5 years. I don't think that's constitutional, because there's nothing in that that requires a court finding that the child was actually battered or the subject of abuse. If there is no court finding that the child has been neglected or anything else, there is no way that anybody can have, that any law enforcement personnel or welfare personnel has the right to go to those people and demand information from them. So this is an unenforceable statute. Another thing is that the statewide agency is to have conferences with district attorneys and all to determine if they're handling the case properly. I can't imagine any district attorney responding to this type of pressure. And it also is a violation of the separation of powers provision of the Constitution, because an executive body does not have the right to tell the district attorney how to handle his job. Another problem, I mentioned this before, is the confidentiality. The juvenile court does the investigating. The police and the district attorney for criminal prosecution will not be able to use that evidence that they develop, I don't think. Because the welfare and juvenile court investigators generally develop their evidence from talking to the parents of the child. And if that's going to be done, it should be done by the trained investigators statewide, that is the police agency. Now, kind of, I've gone fast because I realize there's lots of people here to talk.
Under what statute have you been prosecuting people that
when I was on the grand jury?
Assault their children.
When I was on the grand jury, I would present cases under assaulting children, under where children have been assaulted under assault and battery, which is simple assault and battery, misdemeanor, under aggravated assault. There's a new statute now, sexual abuse of a child. Many times I would consider a child abused, in my record, in my feeling, if he had been sexually assaulted by a parent. Other than that, a lot of times you just can't do it because the problem of abuse and neglect generally and so often is a parent that just doesn't adequately feed or care for a child. Now, if the child dies, or if you have a real serious situation, you can bring it under assault with intent to kill, and you get some very sophisticated theories there under the trying to say that because they do these things over a long period of time, they are deliberately trying to kill their child.
We haven't been able to check in the new criminal code yet. We haven't been able to find any reference to this 146-710, or if it indeed this. Anything in 146 at all that's repealed, or I can't find it in the new criminal code.
That's because, sir, that the new criminal code does not go into procedures. It just goes into the substantive criminal law. This statute
is a
procedural statute for reporting. And this is a thing that most of the speakers this morning have forgotten. It has been interpreted to mean that it's going to do grand things for the entire handling of abuse cases. The entire focus, as I understood it when we started having these meetings in Portland, was to get more areas under a required reporting provision and have more people required to report and have time limits on those reports. And then to have some sort of a cataloging of those reports. Because so often what happens in this, I don't know, in all these cases I've had in court, what we do is we try and get the names of other doctors that the children have been to and physicians. And we start putting this together and you find that in serious cases the children have been all over the state, but there's no reporting. And that's what we tried to, that was my aim anyway, and I thought that was other people's aim, was to get reports.
I'm really more interested in trying to prevent abuse and the problem is fix that and to abuse the children. And really, that's really.
Here's the problem. And people have said that I'm a prosecutor or they excuse me these things. And here's the thing. In a juvenile court, you have to be a prosecutor to get that child within the jurisdiction of the court. You can have all kinds of people come in and say that these people are bad parents because I think they are, and that is not proof that they are bad. When you pick up a battered child, a beaten child, the first thing that has to be done immediately is photographs have to be taken. And if you get the police out of this, they're the one place that has the facilities to photograph, get these nice blow-up and color pictures. You then have to get that child to a hospital for medical reports. An adequate investigation should include a checking of the neighbors immediately, not waiting a few days. It should be done in hours or minutes of what these people have observed those parents do to the children. What happens most of the time, in my experience, and I, without trying to toot my horn, I'm sure I've prosecuted more of these cases in juvenile court, and I usually prosecute than anybody else in this state anyway. People see the child picked up and they're mad because the child is in bad condition at that time. But 2 days later, they feel sorry for the parent. And so they don't talk to you, they don't give you information. And I've gone out myself and talked to people and they describe instances of the child not being able to walk or being horribly abused, but they never report it. And somebody has to get out there right away and check this. And that's presentable evidence in court, in the juvenile court. You have to have evidence within the definitions of the law to get jurisdiction of the case. And that's what's happening in so many cases if we don't get enough evidence to prove that case. It is an adequate case for juvenile court, according to the law as I interpret it, and as I presented the case, that if you can show a child is the subject of injury which could not have happened accidentally. So still, that requires an investigation. And I don't feel that welfare people and juvenile court people are adequately trained to make a proper investigation. Only the police are. And you have to have a district attorney or people that demand that performance of the police. But you're not going to cure it by law. It's got to be people interested in the system. And I don't think that we can cure the problems within our system by new laws or new agencies. And that's my whole point why I'm here today. Right, but I don't think that after a case comes to district attorney and he says, I don't have enough evidence, that a statewide agency can come down and have a conference with him and say, you do have enough evidence and you have to prosecute it.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
No, I don't think that it's worded that way, Mr. Hawk. I think that the gambling statute says that the district attorney is the prime law enforcement officer, and I think that Mr. Langley is disbarred or relieved of office because he didn't support certain laws. And because of the way they're written, there's now federal legislation on gambling that makes it a crime for the district attorney not to prosecute gambling. But I think that's
quite practical. Yeah, you agree that the district attorney plays a concept. Prosecution is very easy because the forfeiture of office is telling us they do prosecute.
And the corrupt practices?
Yeah.
Okay, that's one of the sure things. But
well,
I think
so we can do it.
I don't see, under the way this statute is written, I think the corrupt practices and gambling are two very specific areas that can't be compared to battered child. I can't see a social worker coming up and telling me as a district attorney that I have to prosecute a case when I say it hasn't been adequately investigated and I don't have the evidence to be court. And I don't think that there's a court thing to be a gambling case if he makes that determination. The problem is with getting him to make the determination.
You made several suggestions that the district attorney, the state or Mullen County, have they ever used the legislation to be able to be tested in my office?
No, I don't believe they have. This has been one of the pet projects of mine. I'm not representing Mr. Connell. I mean, I'm here, but just because I'm interested in it.
Do you have all of any plans on their part at all to do anything in this area?
No, I don't. I don't know of any plans on the statewide organization. And I've instructed at meetings and prosecutors on how to handle cases like this, but I have not participated in any meetings on legislative things other than the group of four, which was not, I was the only district attorney there.
Do you know if the Mullen County district attorney's office is going to prepare up and available any information in this area at all? Get a group of people.
I've tried to write up some things. I just haven't gotten it all done, but if it was done, it would be by me alone. It would not be done by our office. Basically, because of workload, there's too many things that they're doing. This is a big problem. We have lots of problems, and right now, I don't want to defend Mr. Khan or anything else. I'm just an employee. But we don't have enough people to prosecute our cases in court. I know that most of us work evenings just to keep up with our caseload. And to take on something like this, I know that I spend my time in the evenings or weekends doing it. I don't have time in my working hours to do it.
I just wondered, you pointed out several things, and my exposure to this whole area is extremely everybody in this room kind of agrees that regardless of the degree of the bill, that's not like something to be done, and you can really quite articulate in some of that area that the law is sufficient. And I kind of get the feeling that we're going to shoot this bill down here if we don't like it, and I don't have any available substitutes. And since this attorney in Mullen County, my county, is the principal agency in this area, and there's and if you say this should remain so, I'm concerned that we don't have a bill.
Well, all I can say is that I've made a lot of notes, I've studied this thing, and I've worked on the committee. I had to drop out of it at one time, and then I know that a couple people just wrote up to go they wanted it, and I could not force my will upon the group of part of it. I'm going to try and write some of these things before I would consider a good bill, and I'll give it to you or anybody else.
That's a good thing.
How much time do we have?
Well, I think in this area, we have a fair amount of time because we have a bill number that can be used. The subject can be used. We don't have to.
I can try and get some time to work on it. I can spend some extra time and do that as far as what. But now, it's my feeling, if I'm not speaking to you, I know I spoke to Senator Brown this morning. I think she disagreed with me partially on this, but not, I don't think totally. But if I did write something, it would only, my only aim is on compulsory reporting. Since any criminal court has to do stuff in it on the criminal aspect of it. But I just think it's, see, some of the problems that I ran into in trying to write this up, I was talking to Mrs. Preston, who is another deputy attorney in Portland. If we require, like, a nurse to report, what if the nurse works for a doctor and the doctor says, you shouldn't report? And then, because of the penalty provisions, we prosecute that nurse for not reporting. She says, the doctor told me not to. This is some of the problems that we ran into. How about the teacher that's told by the principal not to report? And I've tried to write these things out, and I've run into stumbling blocks. This is a real confusing area. How about the juvenile court caseworker that sees something? Because I'm going to report that. The supervisor says no. Now those are the kinds of problems that you run into. And the old law is written, like doctors at a hospital don't report unless the supervisor at the hospital says that they shall report. This is, you can see what there's a little lobbying down there to get that in. Well, this is the problem that you run into.
We have a great deal of problems in confidentiality, though. That would be especially important.
I'm not trying to cast burden on any particular group, but I'm just trying to point out the problems in drafting.
Well,
we
appreciate it very much if you we do have two other bills we're going to, where the people come distance to talk about. We've got two people that haven't asked to testify on 1231. I haven't spoken yet from the Welfare Department, and Mr. Tom Thompson from the Attorney General office. And then we'll allow a few minutes for the two people that want to testify on 1241 and 1244. We have to be out of here. We were supposed to be at the caucus, but this has been more valuable than a caucus. I've never been to Democratic caucus. You're always invited.
You
will be either.
My name is Ray Reeves. I'm with the Social Services Department of the Public Welfare Division. I'm also a member of the Governor's Commission on Children and Youth. The commission has considered House Bill 1231, and we've had some very good testimony, so I'm going to make mine short in the interest of time. I think one of the things the Governor's Commission felt was that there should be a statement of public policy relative to the introduction of this bill. And we have drafted a statement for your consideration. If you want, I'll be glad to meet with the commission. Secondly, we certainly concur that the definition as provided for in this bill needs some expansion and change. It's been my experience, at least, that many people do not report for many reasons, but one of them, I think, surrounds the definition, particularly in what is intentionally and wantonly inflicted and so on, and I think there should be an expansion of the definition of abuse, which should include the sexual abuse as indicated by Mr. Wiley. The increase in the age is good. This has been recommended for many years, and we believe that the age should coincide with the juvenile court age of 18.
You already had a considerable discussion on section 7, subparagraph 4, which deals with the continuation in these cases for 5 years, and we too had concerns about that particular case. We feel that wherever these cases are reported, there should be some time limits that are expressed by other speakers on this bill to generate certain action. We feel that services to protect the child should be available, as any protective service to children should be, and that certainly the social agency should be concerned about this aspect, and the law enforcement people would have to take care of gathering the information to then take to determine if criminal action should be taken. We agree that the statute should be changed to permit more people to report easier, quicker, because after all, one of the intentions of this bill is case finding in the troubled area of child abuse. And certainly, there has been little or no education in Oregon relative to the existing child abuse law. And I'm sure that many teachers and other people that do have a responsibility to report don't know about the bill, and we think an educational action of some kind should be carried on regardless of what bill is finally passed by the legislature.
I am here today on my own behalf and not as representative of my department. My name is Charles Thompson. I'm now the fraud control coordinator with the Department of Justice under the Vice Attorney General. I was the chief investigator for welfare recovery and also work for the governor on the crime control council. I've been interested in the child abuse problem for many years, having attended many of these meetings in Multnomah County with numerous other people that are present. In 67, the Humane Society, which is, I believe in, formed under a grant of the Child Welfare Foundation, American Legion, pointed out that no state, no community has developed a child protective program adequate in size to meet service needs of all reported cases of child neglect, abuse, and exploitation. And it goes down and lists all the states. Under the state of Oregon, only under an attorney general opinion has the Child Welfare Services and the State Welfare Commission authority to act in this area. There's been no law designating as such. And it says that the State Public Welfare Commission may. It doesn't say shall. So if they don't want to take on a case, there's nothing that where they have to. And it points out that responsibility is not specifically assigned to the department under the law. Only responsibility rests on general protective services, obligation to serve cases that are referred to the department. So I think our state is in sad neglect of the children that we have in this state. Under the Department of Justice at present, we have what we call a fraud control coordinator, which I act in that capacity. Welfare Department investigates welfare fraud at the present time, and they send their cases to our office, to the Attorney General's office, which we in turn forward to whatever district attorney it belongs to. These are not social workers in the welfare department. They're all trained investigators. Most of them are ex-policemen. Bob Eric is from Scotland Yard. Roland Park is from the Oregon State Police Department. And we have other men from other various law enforcement agencies. So they're not social workers, they're actually trained investigators. I would propose that initially, as done now, that all these cases should be brought to the attention of the local police department for their quick response to the situation. They, in turn, after making their initial investigation, should refer directly to the investigative staff, the enforcement staff, I must say, of the Welfare Commission, for a formal investigation. Now, these investigations, as they do now in the fraud area, are accepted by the district attorneys and they are being prosecuted around the state. The only reason the Attorney General's office has got into the fraud portion of it is because under the welfare statute, ORS 180, and I forget the other section of it, welfare recovery division is responsible for the initiating and investigating the welfare fraud. So under that statute, we are coordinating with welfare. We find it's a very workable program, but we feel that, or I feel, that if these cases were reported by the local police department for follow-up investigation, that the proper place for a state agency would be still with the welfare department, and it should be by law, with the welfare coordinating with the Department of Justice to see that these reports are properly forwarded to the district attorney for criminal prosecution. Now, this would not interfere with the doctors in their dealing of the abused child. It would not interfere with the social workers in working with the family. This is just another aspect of the child abuse problem. You have the two. One is to work with the family and the doctors to give the medical attention. And the other aspect is the law enforcement portion that we have to keep in it. And this way, I think we could get out of creating a new state agency. I recall several years ago, Dr. Brady at that time stated that he did not have the staff to go into this. And I was surprised when I read this bill that they were establishing under his office, because 4 or 5 years ago he said he didn't have the staff to do it. He had too many other things to do. And I thought it was agreed at that time that that was not the proper place for it. And the first thing he did was pick up the bill today and put it under his office. And I agree with Dr. Brady and Dr. Connaughton.
You would agree that there could be a central point for all the employees to go.
Yes, I think so that's true, and I think that most of the district attorneys are agreeing to this in the consumer fraud and in the welfare fraud program. That's why they're being coordinated with the Department of Justice.
That's all we have time here for, I suppose.
Yeah, I just make a brief comment.
I'm
shocked at the statement that this bill of stuff we got down, and we have a new bill. This bill has a number, it's on the road, it has sponsors, capable sponsors, representing attorneys, ways and means members, it's down the revenue and all. And why can't you set up a subcommittee of one and more members to work with these people and come out with an amended bill that can get through and not incur a lot of ill will with some new bill?
We certainly will work with the bill. On 12-41, Mr. Wiley. Yes, Mr. Wiley.
Yes, I'm here to speak on House Bill 1241 on behalf of the family law committee of the State Bar and the State Bar, which has recommended adoption of the legislation.
We have quiet in the room, please.
This particular bill is in addition to the Reciprocal Support Act, and as probably most of you know, the Reciprocal Act is used in instances where we have a responsible party in one state, perhaps a father or a husband or even a child who might be responsible for a parent, but living here in Oregon and the party to whom he is responsible living in another state. Then through the Reciprocal Act, the proceedings are instituted in the state in which the person to whom the duty of support goes, and then in turn proceedings are filed in the appropriate court having jurisdiction here in the state of Oregon. This act was passed in Oregon, I believe, in 1953, and it's, as far as I know, it's in effect in all the other states of the Union. Now, the addition that we are proposing would provide for an investigation of the financial circumstances of the person to whom the duty of support is owed.
and this would be done at the request of the respondent. Respondent is defined in the existing code as the person owing the duty of support. The investigation would be done in the initiating state, and the report resulting from this would be receivable in evidence in the court having jurisdiction over the responsible party, and to be considered then by the court in fixing the amount of support. The bill also goes on to provide for a temporary court order, which would be effective for a period of 90 days while this report was being undertaken. And if the initiating state failed to provide the report, that failure would be grounds for dismissal of proceedings in the responding state. Now, we have a situation that exists now where often a responsible party will come into court and say, well, my wife or my ex-wife or whatever the situation may be has remarried and has plenty of money and really doesn't need all that she's asking for here. But she has no real convenient means of presenting any evidence to the court on this claim, and nor does the court have any way of finding out whether there's any foundation here. In effect, then, here what we have is a relatively simple addition to the existing act, which would resolve an area of dispute that often arises now, and would allow the court to make a decision about the amount of support to have more information before it, so that it could more intelligently decide for an appropriate amount. Any questions that you have?
Well, Mr. Wiley, aren't most court orders based upon, most reciprocals are based upon an order of support that's been entered in some court for some reason, usually divorce, maybe like support of children. And the court that enters that order has continuing jurisdiction over that case. Isn't that proper? The matter should be determined as to whether there should be a reduction in support?
No. Well, that's true that often that is the situation, that there has been a support order entered in a particular court, but it's difficult to see them if it's a separate court action and is asking for a brand new order.
If he's based upon an originating order somewhere else.
Not necessarily.
Nobody uses it, at least not.
Well, not in my experience, no.
What is it based on? Is it an abandonment and no support of the
kids? Often that's a situation like that. A husband leaves his wife and kids down in California and moves to Oregon from the chief. And California probably has no jurisdiction under a support order then. I think so they begin to see the district attorney's office. Instituted there and then filed there in the appropriate court in Washington, Oregon.
And based upon an affidavit of the party in question.
That's right. An affidavit which, at least the ones I've seen, are pretty limited in the amount of information they contain. And the present code doesn't specify any particular form that's required to.
Two questions. One, just in handling the case, there's no opportunity to cross examine the person that made the affidavit, and the respondent is just kind of left holding the bag. Terribly unfair if they're really going to be here day in court. The affidavit's filed, the interrogatories are sometimes filed with it, and that's it. But who's going to do this independent?
Well, that would be up to whatever state initiated the proceeding. They could designate the welfare department or student court representatives or something like that. So we can't really say in this bill
what California, what means they're going to use to get this information.
If they don't do it, then it's just not.
That's right.
Do any other states have similar I'm concerned about the compounding of the problem, and that you're putting an unverified hearsay statement into evidence on top of an affidavit that you can't already can't cross examine. And you don't comment on that.
Fight file is fine.
Yeah, but you're sworn, and you got
that's true, but at least it's something more in addition. It's impossible to get entirely around the problem. I think that at least the court will have a little bit more, and the poor guy who's saying, well, gee, my wife or my ex-wife is married to a Texas oil millionaire now. Maybe at least some of those things would come out. It's not an entire remedy to that problem. No.
Any more questions? No, thank you very much. We have about 12:44, Mr. Harrington, here. We have to be upstairs in about 10 minutes.
Francis Harrington, Oregon State Bar, member of the Committee on Family and Juvenile Law. The bill number 1244 is what we might call a long-arm statute intending to bring within the jurisdiction of the Oregon court a particular group of people. What we have provided here is taken the general nature of a transaction theory as far as marriage is concerned. We're concerned with the person who, finding his marriage reaching a termination and feeling that there may be some support orders or something of that sort, or for some other reason, to pass from the place of residence or domicile and therefore escapes the jurisdiction of the Oregon court, leaving within the jurisdiction of the court and for the support of the state and for the generally, very frequently, the welfare benefits of the state, a family. And he himself is accepting for the activities of a welfare department or through a reciprocal proceeding initiated through the district attorney's office in Oregon and the district attorney's office in the other state. There is no recourse for the spouse who is left behind. Now, we provide in Section 3 that where the parties have concurrently, both of them have maintained residence or domicile within the state continuously for 6 months, we feel that this gives Oregon a legitimate interest in the marriage, with both parties having been here and having established their home here. That this should give the circuit court personal jurisdiction over the parties to the marriage and the suit for an omen of dissolution when personal service can't be made within the state because one is left. And we place a 6 month limit upon that, feeling that the party who has left would not have established another home in another jurisdiction on a permanent basis within 6 months and should within that period still be subject to the control and jurisdiction of the Oregon court. This is a it's quite a serious problem with a number of people because of the great mobility of our population. We're having now an influx of people from California because of conditions down there, and I think in view of what happened at 6 o'clock this morning, we may even anticipate a much larger group, a major earthquake. Major earthquake in Los Angeles, three people known dead, many buildings damaged, and the schools are closed for further investigation of whether they are safe. It's regarded as the worst earthquake in 20 years, and may go higher than that. Provide that for personal service upon the person in the other jurisdiction, and we feel that this should give the court of Oregon personal jurisdiction over the individual to render a personal judgment for money or with respect to property, which could be enforced then in the other state in a civil proceeding. At the present time, we're pretty well limited to a criminal proceeding through the district attorney. Now, that is Section 3 of the proposed act. Under Section 4 of the Act, we have the typical situation where one spouse has left the jurisdiction and obtained a divorce in another state. Leaving the Oregon resident who has continuously maintained the domicile of residence here without any recourse whatever for support or for division of property or anything else. As you know, when a divorce may be obtained, for instance, by someone who would leave Oregon and go to Nevada or Arizona, get a divorce on a short-term jurisdiction, then the parties would become automatically tenants in common of any real property that might exist in Oregon. This pretty well deprives the Oregon resident of any recourse with respect to that property. So we provide, and this may have extremely limited application, but where the party has left the state, obtained a divorce in another jurisdiction, and is thereafter personally served within this jurisdiction, regardless of the time which may have elapsed, that the court may have jurisdiction over the support rights of that time. And we feel that this is valuable remedial legislation and essential because of the great mobility of people in today's society and the way that people leave the state to obtain divorces in other jurisdictions.
Thank you.